the Midweek Drive Team, four words which signify quality and all that's best in audio entertainment.
It's a brand new show on Siren Radio, and we're calling it at present Business Matters, because it does. And we're delighted to have as our first guest on Business Matters a fabulous individual. She's got a whole range of experiences with respect to school, with respect to education, and so on and so forth. She's currently actually head of a small independent school as well. We're delighted to welcome to the programme the wonderful Claire Lyons. How are you, Claire?
I'm very well, thank you, this morning. We've had a bright start to the day because we've been celebrating Harvest Festival here in school. And this year we've done it quite differently because we've celebrated with our immediate family, as in just with the children and our staff here. And our director of music has put on an outstanding performance with our choirs. And we've had the Reverend Terry in, who's told us some wonderful stories about with underlying morals. So it's been a really, really good start to Wednesday.
Fantastic. And now, the school itself that you head up is called Burton Hatho. Share with us, where is it and why is it such a vital part of the community? And why is it at Burton Hatho you do things differently?
So we are located, and there's a lot of people in Lincolnshire who still don't know that we're here. So we're located just off the A57 past the David Lloyd Leisure Centre. We're tucked away, which makes it a really special place for the children to be. It's like their own little bubble that feels slightly cut off from the rest of the world on a day-to-day basis, although obviously we do balance that with making sure that they interact with the community, making sure that they get out and experience different things, that they're not too concealed within their bubble. And the journey at Burton Hatho started only 10/11 years ago. So we're relatively new as a business, and we're certainly relatively new as a school, because you find that a lot of independent schools have been established for very many years. But I think one of the things that is individual about Burton Hatho is, even though we're a new school, we're kind of a tried and tested team. So many of us who are here still 10/11 years on began life together at another independent school in Lincoln, and then moved across and developed and grew Burton Hatho as a new school when two of the significant establishments in Lincoln merged together.
Now, Claire, clearly you are head teacher of Burton Hathaway. That's an enormous responsibility. And we know that obviously the stresses and challenges that are often faced within that. Was that part of the career plan right from the start? If you speak to the young Claire, go back a few years, not too many, admittedly. Was it something which you said, yes, I fully intend to actually be running my own independent school by 2023?
Like many of us, absolutely not. No, that was not in the career plan from the offset. So when I started out, my intention, I suppose, I would like to have been a performer. So an actress, a stage actress, that's kind of the direction that I would have liked to have headed in at one point when I was kind of in my late teens, early 20s. But unfortunately, I couldn't sing, which was a little
That
bit of a
hasn't stopped
barrier
many a pop
for
career, Claire. I mean,
me.
for goodness
No.
sakes.
But when it came to any kind of theatre, it seemed to be part of the package. And I tried several times, but it wasn't meant to be. So education was something where I could still very much enjoy the English, the drama. I'm kind of a huge fan of teaching Shakespeare, particularly to the younger children, and making it accessible because it's such a scary word to so many young people these days. So, no, it wasn't part of the initial plan. But it's something that, like so many of us, your career evolves, something that I embrace, enjoy, and I'm really pleased with the destination, even though I didn't type it into the sat nav at the beginning.
There are a large number of similarities, of course, between the proscenium arch of the stage and the kind of techniques that you will use in that and what you'd use in the classroom. Whether you're talking about, my own training at Lambda certainly paved the way for becoming a head of biology in a comprehensive school, and then followed that obviously with university stuff. So that, I mean, a lot of the techniques in terms of communication are critical. And it's interesting, I mean, we call the show Business Matters. And so why start it with education? Well, of course, that's the core of the whole essence. And communication seems certainly to be something which sometimes we forget. I mean, have you sort of found this that actually, I mean, obviously the good educators don't, but it is a case of connecting with our pupils.
Absolutely. And I think communication is more important now than it's ever been because our children are going to go out into the wider world at some point in the very near future. And their communication skills are going to be vital because a lot of the ways that in which they communicate now are through online platforms, through games, those kinds of things. So it's really important to us that we instill that kind of, I suppose, more traditional communication. So we always encourage public speaking opportunities, we encourage live performances, we expect and support all of our children in being involved in those kind of things because, otherwise they're not naturally, those opportunities aren't organic anymore because of the amount we do online. So we involve ourselves yearly with the Speech and Drama Festival. There are many opportunities through the Independent Schools Association for public speaking and performance. There's, of course, the Lambda exam. So, I've also taught Lambda for many years. And before I came to Burton Hatho, had a theatre school in which I taught Lambda, all the way up to the grade eights. So it is vital. And if that's one skill that we can give our children before they go out into the wider world, to be able to communicate, to know how to interact, to be able to put themselves forward, so that they've got those skills when it comes to interviews, when it comes to actually being able to proactively go out and communicate with people and make the world a better place, I suppose. Not wanting to be a cliche, but that's what we want our children to be able to do. So we need to give them the tools to do that.
You mentioned, of course, grade eight there, of course, to be followed by bronze, silver, and gold, and then teacher's diploma, which was
Of
my
course.
own route through the whole system. So, and for the benefit of the uninitiated, Lambda is actually the London Academy for Music and Dramatic Arts, in case people are thinking, what's another acronym that's actually there on that basis? So it's important to do that. Let's talk more about Burton Hathaway, because you mentioned something there, Claire, which I think is particularly important, i.e., the online nature. I mean, clearly, you can go to burtonhatho.co.uk and find out a wonderful website, which will open up various other bits and pieces. Are you finding that with children obviously being screen literate from a much younger age? I mean, back in my day, it was probably a case of we might watch a bit of television, but ultimately you weren't really kind of dominated by it. But so many screen-oriented mobile devices and so on that are actually there, possibly exacerbated, as we were saying before this interview started, by the pandemic, where clearly, presumably, that was also a challenge for Burton Hatho to actually work about how do we deliver this in an online system. And once that genie is out of the box, shall we say, you don't want to necessarily put it back. So how do you square that circle between ensuring that children are digitally literate, but at the same time, they don't become digitally literate at the expense of other vital social skills?
It's a difficult balance because, of course, you know, having that digital literacy opens up a whole world of opportunity and knowledge for the children, you know, so we don't want to not give them that tool to use, and they do use it on a daily basis. So all of our children from year three upwards have their own devices that they bring to school, and we do use in lessons, and we make films, and they do photo shoots, and they use it for all sorts of designs, for mood boards, for everything. You know, there's so many tools that they can use on their iPads now, as we know. So we do also promote the benefits of having access to that online world, but we do need to be really careful. And we do make sure that when we're planning the curriculum and when we're delivering the curriculum, that we do have a really clear balance, and that we actually audit and monitor that balance to make sure that we're not going too far down the digital literacy world. But children also know how they need to know how to manage themselves. And they also need to know, you know, we talk about employment and we talk about children going out into businesses and into the working world. They need to be so aware of the fact that businesses are now checking digital footprints and the kind of things that they're posting. And, you know, children will access online platforms that they're too young to really be interacting with. And, you know, it is raising that awareness. And when that kind of world of work seems so far in the future to them, you know, when they're sat at 10 and 11 and starting to kind of experiment with TikTok and Instagram and all of those things that start to kind of nudge their way into their kind of catalogue of activities, it's really important that we constantly, and it is constant, you know, make sure that they're safe, make sure that they understand what the implications of what they're doing online are, make sure that they understand, you know, even when it comes to kind of appropriate behaviors with their peers online, it's a whole education in itself. And of course, we have to cover everything else. We've still got to cover the maths, the English, and we've still got to cover the online safety. We've still got to educate our children in terms of what things will impact them when they take their first steps into whatever businesses or whatever areas of work they choose to go into. You know, they're quite vulnerable now in a way that we perhaps weren't when we were kind of working our way forward.
A recent report into the future of the classroom in 2050 suggested that the digital domination will continue to develop. And speaking of somebody who was obviously quite amazed by the huge technology of the overhead projector, which probably sort of sets a scene, etc. Yeah. You think, wow, you know, putting all those sheets of paper and you can get magical transparencies and use that to open up things. But that's another line. Let's continue discussing your school, Burton Hatho, because I do like the line, at Burton Hatho, we do things differently. There's no blanket syllabus, no repetitive basic teaching framework. Now, on the one hand, I was immediately minded of the Steiner school models and the notion of Steiner schools, which seem to have a similar kind of ethos insofar as it's not regimentation, it's not necessarily processing individuals, it's allowing people to develop. Is that a distinctive philosophy that you're looking to have at Burton Hatho to really round the whole development of the child?
Absolutely. And to some extent, it's a very difficult kind of, I suppose, marketing angle, because people tend to think that you're one or the other. You know, you're either an academic school or you're a kind of free spirited, let's experiment and try things in lots of different ways kind of school. And that simply isn't the case. You know, there's so much research that supports how practical learning hugely supports and improves academic learning. And I think it's, you know, academics are and always will be important, because at the end of the day, we're preparing children for when they take their GCSEs. You know, even at this age, all the input that they have is kind of leading towards this exam that will, you know, kind of surmise their whole school career. So we do have practical learning for us as a school is incredibly important, because not one boot fits all, not one child will learn in one particular way. And there are so many neurodiversities and so many additional needs now that we have in schools that we have to start to cater for. And practical learning makes academic learning so much more accessible. So it's a stepping stone to academics as much as it is a promotion of life skills and those kinds of things. going back to the performing, you know, our children perform Shakespeare in Shakespeare's original language before they leave the school. When they go into year 10 and they're presented with a Shakespeare text, they're not frightened of it. They've lived and breathed and they've stood in a character's shoes. They've spoken the words. It's so different to reading it on a piece of paper or doing a closed procedure passage on what Shakespeare was or how he wrote. And we kind of take that approach, not just with English, but, you know, with the maths. If they're out there, if they're doing woodwork and they're measuring and they're cutting and it has a real purpose, then the learning is so much deeper embedded than it is if you are doing some sums on a piece of paper. And parents are sometimes, I think, still quite frightened of that. It's like we can't see it written down, so it can't be happening. And that isn't the case. You know, it's happening to a greater depth because it's not written down quite often. But people are still very scared of that. So there's a whole, I think there's a whole world of education to be done with parents as well about actually what makes learning stickable, what makes it stick, what allows that child to take that with them for the next 5 years, for the next 10 years, for the next 15. And that's the difference between, I think, doing and, I mean, writing still is still an important part of what we do, but it can't all be done through let's fill in this sheet, let's write this out, let's copy this down. And, you know, because the children will not 99% of the time ever read that back. They're not going to go back through their book and revise it, you know. So the doing of it is hugely important. So I wouldn't say it's an ethos of ours necessarily to have a kind of free exploratory kind of curriculum. It's a very directed curriculum underpinned by practical learning with academic outcomes.
We, of course, live in an era where metrication, the metrics, feedback, generating league tables, all essential parts, it would seem, of the world in which we live. That can only add to the pressure of being a head teacher. And I've often thought in many ways, you know, head teachers are required not only to be outward facing, as we're doing today, as you're doing as part of this program, but also very much caring on a kind of chief executive officer style for the actual internal organization itself. How do you relax? How do you cope with all of those extraneous pressures, the likes of which seem to almost occur on a daily basis in education?
I think we're very lucky in the independent sector in some respects, because we're not obliged to do SATs, for example. So most independent schools now will opt out of SATs because it tailors the curriculum too tightly. So, you know, in a lot of state schools, there is a lot of pressure. There's an awful lot of pressure for results, and there's a lot of pressure for the league tables, you know, for the reflection and the evidence when it comes to being inspected. So I think because we don't have to, I mean, what we have to do is make sure that our children go on to their next educational setting with really strong foundations and really good academics. But we don't have to funnel them down a reading comprehension path to get results. And it makes a huge difference to the breadth of their learning. So it's nice not to have that pressure, although obviously we still carefully monitor the progress. You know, we do participate in external examinations that will allow us to compare our data nationally, because that's really important, because when we've only got a very small cohort of children, comparing them to one another wouldn't mean anything at all. So we do assess our children to make sure we can compare them nationally, to make sure, because in this kind of environment we expect that most of them would be working above a national average, and we need to make sure that, you know, we can actually evidence that that is what is happening. And I think as well, you know, in the independent sector, I think in the state sector as well, with the academies, you know, you are running a business as well. So you're absolutely right. You know, you're running a business where your clients are sharing their most precious thing in the world with you. And a lot of what you deal with is emotion, because as parents, we operate with emotion because we want the best for our child. So it's a very different kind of product. You know, but it is still, you know, like, and of course, there's a huge focus on well-being now. You know, the independent schools inspector, they've just changed their inspection framework. So the focus is primarily on the well-being of the child. There's a lot of mental health support that we need to put in place for children. We need to make sure that we're promoting well-being on a daily basis, which of course is right. I think the expectation on schools in terms of, and head teachers in terms of what we're expected to deliver that we can't access outside of schools anymore is also huge, you know, is huge as well.
So I go back to my original question. How do you relax? Is it through listening to Louis Armstrong and What a Wonderful World, perhaps?
Oh, definitely. Do you know, sometimes just kicking back, putting on a little bit of music, especially a little bit of Louis Armstrong, is a perfect way to relax. And also maybe going for a little after work run, maybe a gym session, and putting something with a little bit more energy on, for example, a bit of Becky Hill, something that's going to kind of get the adrenaline working after a tough day at work, work away some of those stresses of the day, shall we say.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry, I watch them grow. They're like much more than I ever knew. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
We're speaking to Claire Lyons, who's head teacher at Burton Hatho School, an independent school just outside, well, in Lincolnshire, and just outside the system. You describe it so well. Explain, Claire, where exactly people can locate Bishop Hatho once again.
So Burton Hatho is just off the A57. So we're about 5-6 minutes outside the lower end of the city. Just near the David Lloyd Leisure Centre, just past Burton Waters. We're about a minute past Burton Waters.
Yeah, so Burton Hatho, the place to locate the future of civilization, shall we say? Maybe that's a strapline you won't be using. Perhaps a bit too hyperbolic on the whole process. Claire, the news recently, obviously, proving once again that education is a political football bounced between parties like some kind of crazed offering. The suggestion that actually schools in the independent sector will be faced with a lack of VAT relief, although they'll be charged VAT. There's lots of things likely to be happening there, given the prospective change of government we might well be faced with, certainly in the next 18 months or thereabouts. Is that something which causes sleepless nights? Is it a case of, you know, obviously parents who in many cases, and I think it needs to be appreciated, make a lot of sacrifices to ensure their children do actually have the opportunity, the best opportunity they can actually get, not necessarily because they have any ideological challenges, but because they're so concerned about a system which consistently seems to be under stress, underfunded. We know this. We know the reason that actually that's one of the reasons that the independent sector is so popular. But that change, which seems to be a very significant change, almost, dare I say, as significant as when they abandoned the 11 plus a few years ago for sort of state schools to grammar schools and such like, really. What are your thoughts, please?
So it's, from a business perspective, it's a huge strain for all independent schools. And, you know, the government's intention is probably to hit those independent schools who do make a huge amount of money every year. And there are not many of them, you know, and I think that's surprising to a lot of people that, you know, most independent schools aren't profit making. Most independent schools are charities. We're not actually a registered charity. But once we become subject to VAT, what we spend isn't significant enough for us to claim back the VAT that we'll have to put onto school fees. So we're going to find ourselves in a very, very vulnerable position in the independent sector once they put VAT, or if they put VAT on school fees, which we're expecting to happen September 25 if Labour are voted in. So we have a lot of conversations about it, and there's a lot of feelings of, I suppose, it's been slightly unjust because universities don't have VAT on there.
Well, not yet, anyway. Who knows what
could happen? Not yet. And it seems to be the idea that it won't. So it will be education across the board. It won't be nursery schools, we're thinking. It's looking like it will be specifically be that kind of mainstream core 5 to 16 or 5 to 18 independent school education that will be hit. And I do think it will put a strain back on the state system, because many of our pupils, independent education has changed so significantly over the years, and it is no longer just for the privileged. The independent sector supports many, many children who, for whatever reason, don't suit mainstream. You know, they don't suit the big classes, the busy environments. You know, they don't find necessarily that they can effectively have SEMH needs met because the staff are just too stretched. So the independent sector, I mean, across the board now is looking, I think, approximately about 25% additional needs. If those children, if those families can no longer access the independent sector because it's no longer affordable to them, it will put all of this stress back onto the state sector. And what really worries me is that we'll see a lot more school refusal because there aren't going to be those alternative choices. There aren't going to be different environments that children can access. So it's not as kind of clear cut as independent schools are all making loads of money. Let's stick some VAT on the school fees and make a little bit of it back, because a lot of schools will probably find it difficult to be sustainable when that happens.
As you said, the historical aspects of Eton, Harrow, Gordonston and so on, they are, you know, they've been around for a lot longer, clearly, but they've also become much more part of the establishment. And I do feel as though there are issues that sometimes are overlooked when you start talking about the areas within that whole field. What advice would you give for somebody who's looking to get into education? I mean, given that maybe some of our listenership for this particular program might be in their undergraduate careers at university, they might be doing an English degree, a journalism degree, whatever degree they're actually doing, a business degree. Would you say it's a rewarding profession? I know that almost sounds like a cliche, but is it a rewarding profession?
Absolutely, it is a rewarding profession. And I think the way that teacher training is delivered now manages the expectations of teachers perhaps better. I think it's more difficult for teachers that have been in the system for 10, 20, 30 years already and have seen these significant changes and these different emphases now that we have to manage on a day-to-day basis. I think teachers coming into the profession are going to be much better prepared. If I could say one thing, though, it would probably be it's not a part-time job. I think so many people think when they go into teaching, great, I've got the holidays, you know, I'm only going to work, you know, it's going to be 38 weeks a year. It's lovely to have the flexibility in the holidays, but if you can go in more with a mindset that actually it's a full-time job the same as any other, but I have some flexible working weeks every year, then you might be less disappointed when you face the workload that comes with teaching. So I think if I would say anything, it's like, if you go into teaching, look at it as a full-time job, the same as any other, and enjoy the flexible working hours in the holidays.
Yes, the mythology of the extraordinary long vacation time you actually have at all sectors of education has long been a bane of my existence. But that's by the by. I mean, literally, you could say, well, if you went into acting, you'd equally have periods of intense concentration followed by periods of, shall we say, being in between jobs or possibly even resting. Just a thought, but there we are. So again, in terms of Burton Hatho, where do you see the school itself developing over the next few years? I mean, obviously, under your auspices, are you were you the first head of the school? So or was there a predecessor?
Yeah, no, I wasn't the first head of the school. So there was a predecessor. So Penny Ford, who was here, she's been here. So we, when the school was founded, we were both directors of the school when it was founded. Penny was the head for the first 10 years of the school. So my headship is relatively new, although I've always been very heavily involved in the school, you know, as a director, as a deputy head. So she has now gone on to Pastures New Ventures. So it is a really exciting time for us here at Burton Hatho because we've done the first 10 years and, you know, we need to have another period of growth. We need to have, you know, I suppose another vision. You know, so we are looking very closely at the next 5 years and what we want the school to look like and actually how we want to market ourselves. And I think that, you know, it's a really interesting point that you made earlier about, you know, the different types of schools that you can potentially be. And I think it's like you don't just have to be one type of school. And so the whole staff at the moment is involved in looking at strategy, looking at the development of the school, looking at what's on the tin and what the actual ingredients are. And, you know, are the right ingredients on the tin? Do we need to change the ingredients or do we need to change the packaging? So we're kind of having a real kind of reflection time in terms of where do we want the school to go? You know, what do we want the school to be? We never want to be two form entry. You know, we don't have the infrastructure for that. It's that we want to have, I suppose, a school where there's extensive opportunities, where children can really find, it's again, goes back to that be who you want to be, find their niche, find what it where it is that they excel and actually allow those areas where they excel to shape them and to grow self-esteem. And, you know, it might be in cooking, you know, we have cooking classes, it might be in swimming, it might be in academics, but we need to look and we need to help children find those areas where they can feel really confident, where they can find themselves and find so that when they go to their secondary schools, those roots and those foundations are really well laid. So I suppose the kind of growth of the school is it's all about making sure that those opportunities remain, making sure that we don't have to water things down to accommodate 20% VAT fees and those kind of things, because it's the specialist teaching that makes the independent sector unique. And I think that's because, you know, if you're going to be an instrumentalist, if you're going to be a musician, if you're going to be a successful sports person, that doesn't start at 11, as we know. You know, most people who go into a profession of in those particular areas, they've been playing since they were 7 or 8. You know, they've been involved in a particular sport. That's not to say children can't, you know, develop those skills later down the line, but we live in a competitive world. And it's about making sure that children have the opportunity to experience all of those different things at a crucial time in their lives, really.
I'm smiling because I'm just looking at the website and seeing some of the great material you got from the art department, and I was drawn to the rabbitiness image that's actually there, because we can do with more rabbitiness in the world. I think that's very good.
Yeah, we could.
Sequence. So great stuff. Yeah. We've featured Louis Armstrong. We're going to go out with some Becky Hill. Again, as you say, you get that work-life balance to one side. Let's talk mottos, because certain schools do have a school motto and so on. Obviously, the University of Lincoln, it's, I think, freedom through wisdom, libertas per sapiens. Have you got a school motto? Is there one that you're thinking about? Is there a school motto that you have in mind, or is that maybe something you'll put in the next 5 years of development?
We've had a few over the years, to be fair. I mean, one of the most significant ones is, again, we have actually had as one of our strap lines, be who you want to be. And that's really important to us, be who you want to be. And the other thing that we really instill in the children is respect. You know, we're all different, be who you want to be, but do it with respect, do it with tolerance, you know, and that's respect between staff, respect between child and staff, respectfully child in charge. You know, we treat each other how we wish to be treated, and that's how we want our children to go out into the world. We want them to go out being what who they want to be, and we want them to go out expecting respect, valuing respect, and, you know, treating others with respect. So those things are really important to us. But I think that be who you want to be is so important, especially because in life there are so many pressures to be somebody else.
Absolutely. I was always thinking it kind of reminds me of a popular music tune from the 1970s or 80s, actually, Do Anything You Want to Do. Eddie and the Hot Rods, I think they actually had a hit for that, which is a kind of variation on Be What You Want to Be. It's a different line there. Before your time, I'm sure, Claire, in terms of clearly. Becky, we've got Becky Hill coming up. Claire, it's been terrific connecting with your good self today. Genuine pleasure. Thank you so much for being our first guest on Business Matters. A real genuine delight. And we look forward to hopefully featuring your good self and who knows, various other events that are taking place at Burton Hatho in the not too distant future, if you'd be kind enough to return.
Absolutely. It's been lovely. I've really enjoyed having the opportunity to, you know, share with you some of the elements of Burton Hatho and some of the challenges that are upcoming in the independent sector. So thank you so much for inviting me. Thank you for having me on. And I'm honoured to be your first business.
It's an item you can even include in the school brochure, I'm sure. The first official business matter co-host and co-presenter.
I was trying to remember what the feature was called. But yeah, thank you very much. Thank you.
Let's dance in style. Let's dance for a while. Heaven can wait, we're only watching the skies. Hoping for the best, but expecting the worst. Are you gonna drop the bomb or not? Let us die young, or let us live forever. We don't have the power, but we never say never. Sitting in a sandpit, life is a short trip. The music's for the sad man. Imagine when this race is won. Turn our golden faces into the sun. Praising our leaders, we're getting in tune. The music's played by the madman. Forever young, I wanna be forever young. Do you really wanna live forever and ever and ever? Some are a melody and some are the beat. Sooner or later, they all will be gone. Why don't they stay young? Oh, it's so hard to get old without a cause. I don't wanna perish like a fading horse. Youth's like diamonds in the sun, and diamonds are forever. So many adventures couldn't happen today. So many songs we forgot to play. So many dreams swinging out of the blue. We'll let them come true. Forever young, I wanna be forever young. Oh, do you really wanna live forever and ever?
Sit on top of your knee. Go ahead and take. I say to you, you are God's gift to all womanhood. Take it from me, take it from me.
Okay, the cost of living crisis, it certainly doesn't show any sign of going away, and it does indeed seem to be impacting all areas of life, including the way we're booking our winter holidays. And to talk us through some suggestions with respect to that, and maybe actually have some helpful hints as well, we're delighted to welcome to the programme Club Med's Managing Director in the UK, Ireland and Nordics, that's Nicholas Bresch. How are you, Nicholas?
Good. Hello, Alex. Hello, everyone.
Well, great to connect with your good self, and quite fascinated by the fact that almost half of people in the UK have already booked a winter holiday for the upcoming season, with earlier bookings, of course, saving people money. So is that the simple takeaway from this, Nicholas? Book early, save money, do it now.
It is indeed a key takeaway of this key report that we are publishing today, and we are thrilled to share that with you. Indeed, the cost of living is an increasing worry for our skiers in the country. And yes, one of the best way to go around that and to minimize the cost is to book early, because it's where you can secure some of the best deal, and also to lock the price of your holiday and not worry about a future price increase. Another tip that is, and we see it from the survey, is that booking an all-inclusive holiday can help to secure the overall cost, and to avoid to have any hidden ones coming up afterwards. And the report shows that now all-inclusive holiday and accommodation is the number one choice for the skiers in the UK. And you know, it's definitely mirror that what we do here in Club Med, because we are specialized in the all-inclusive offering. With really the mission to offer a frictionless holiday to the guest, and you know, I was talking to a family at a recent client event, and they were underlying, you know, the peace of mind that that we can offer when skiing with Club Med, where you know everything is taken care of, from you ski being ready in your lockers when you arrive, and you know, having the peace of mind, everything secured, use ski pass so you don't have to queue at the counter, again, the ski in your locker so you don't have to queue at the ski shop, having your kids care handled so you can enjoy your skiing session, and that for different levels. The dad was explaining me all his adventure doing off slope in the Alps, and of course with the ability to have gourmet cuisine and premium accommodation. So yeah. The tips is book early and book all inclusive.
Okay. Now, I'm also quite surprised that you offer a snow guarantee. And that's no joke, obviously. In terms of the snow guarantee, basically, if more than 50% of the ski domain is actually closed due to lack of snow, you're not going to actually just get out the white powder. You're going to actually offer a full guaranteed money back, or at least you'll be moved to a different resort.
Yeah. So, well, basically, in Club Med, we have the chance to have an extensive portfolio of resorts in the Alps. We have more than 18 resorts across the Alps, and three quarter of them are above 1,800 meters elevation. So, in itself, it's already a snow guarantee because at this elevation, you do get snow across the season. It's true that last year, in some lower altitude resorts, we did have some issues in January only. But With having such an extensive portfolio, we were able to move some of our clients to other resorts in higher altitude. So it's something we want to commit and to guarantee to our clients. And also, if by any chance we're unable to accommodate them because the other resorts are full, for example, we'll offer a voucher for the clients to experience its ski holiday at another date in the season.
Tourists are becoming more and more aware of the environment. They're becoming more and more aware of issues such as sustainability. Does that also fit within the mission of Club May as well?
It does definitely, and it echoes. I mean, since we've been created 70 years ago, we have one of our value, which is responsibility, and it's responsibility towards the local community that are welcoming us, but also towards the environment. And since many years now, we've taken strong commitments in this regards by having all our resorts what we call Green Globe certified. So Green Globe is an external entity that audits our resorts on a yearly basis to check what is our consumption of energy, what are the guidelines and processes to reduce waste. And I will maybe stop on the waste element because we offer all inclusive stay. So you know, sometimes you have the idea that having a buffet is a strong source of waste. So we've developed different techniques around this. And you know, to give you a couple of example is we have now more and more live cooking station where actually you have a chef that is preparing the food for you and putting the right amount of food so you don't, you know, put too much more than you can eat. You can of course come back anytime if you want more, but by doing that we are reducing the waste. And we as of now we have minimized it at 100 grams per people per meal, which is the size of a kiwi. Also in terms of energy consumption, there's a lot of innovation which are put forward, having solar panel in most in many of our resorts, having energy management, you know, making sure that we don't heat any places that are empty along the day, because in a resort you have flow of people which are very different around the days. And also, you know, simple things like in your room, as when you open the window, the heaters switch off automatically because we don't want to heat outside. So all this measure to minimize our consumption and to be able to again be careful on and concerned about the sustainability and the environment. There's also a strong element because when you look at the resorts, the strong impact in terms of carbon emission is actually its construction at the construction phase. So here as well, we're being certified by BREEAM, which is an external entity that check, you know, what kind of concrete we use and how we run the overall operation to make sure that we minimize our impact on the environment.
It's a win-win situation. Are you a keen skier yourself, Nicholas, or is it a case of no, I use water skis as opposed to snow skis?
No, I'm a keen skier. I'm a snowboarder actually. So yeah, I do love going in the mountains and experiencing the ski holiday, and especially with Club Med. So yes. What about you, Alex?
You know, it's one of those areas. One of these days, I'll take it off the bucket list. But you might be persuading me. You might be persuading me, Nicholas, to actually take those first tentative steps to the slopes. But who knows? And people still booking ahead? Can people book ahead for winter 2024?
Yeah, sure. Definitely. The it's we actually entering the even though I mean half of the people have already booked, but we have the other half which are still going to book. So we are definitely in a peak period now until the end of the season.
Fantastic. And just to remind people, how can people actually access your fabulous company via the web?
Yeah, sure. So you can visit us on our website. So it's clubmed.co.uk if you want to get more information about our offering.
Nicholas Bresch, Club Med's Managing Director in the UK, Ireland, and the Nordics. Huge thanks and happy skiing, Nicholas, or happy snowboarding even.
Thank you very much, Alex, and hopefully we'll look forward to welcome you one day.
Thank you.
Thank you.